Who's the prayer guy?
Who'd like to say a prayer after the 2-minute meditation?
I'll try.
Okay.
All right.
Opportunity. Thank you for the men to bring us the message. Ask you to open our minds and our hearts up this message. Ask you to relieve us from the bondage of self, self-delusion, self-pity, anger, and hatred, or confine us. Thank you. Thank you. In sweet name.
Amen. Amen. Amen.
I think you've got a class. All right, so this one is called Practice. Talk about practice. I say that all the time, and my kids have no idea what I'm talking about.
Have you ever watched the entire interview?
It's actually a great interview. If you watch the whole thing.
He got railroaded on that, but anyway.
What? Practice? Just Google practice sometime. I'm not talking about game. I'm talking about practice. All right, so practice. Derail a little bit there. And we're back. Spiritual success is gained by daily cultivation. If you practice for the day, you have won. If you were lazy for the day, you have lost. Self-cultivation is the heart of spiritual attainment. Gaining insight and ability is not a matter of grand statements, dramatic initiations, or sporadic moments of enlightenment. Those things are only a highlight in a life of consistent activity. Whatever system of spirituality you practice, do it every day. If it is prayer, then pray every day. If it is meditation, then meditate every day. If it is exercise, then exercise every day. Only then you will be able to say that you are truly practicing spirituality. This methodical approach is reassuring in several ways. First, it provides you with a process and a means to maintain progress, even if that particular day is not inspiring or significant. Just to practice is already good. Secondly, it gives you a certain faith. If you practice every day, it is inevitable that you will gain from it. Thirdly, constant practice gives you a certain satisfaction. How can you say to yourself that you have truly entered a spiritual path unless you can look back at years of daily practice and take comfort in the momentum that it has given you? So, we sometimes hear steps 10 and 11 referred to as the maintenance steps, but we have to practice them. Before I go there, I wanted to hit on the, if you look, go to the bottom of page 83. In most of the meetings that I've been around that are AA meetings, they also read the things called the promises. And what most people get kind of confused about is they don't realize what promises they really are. You don't have to do it, but if you were to look on page 76, you would see in the middle of the page it says 8 and 9. If you were to look on page 84, it says step 10. And the promises that people refer to are AA, that they refer to as AA's promises, are really the ninth step promises. Okay, that's important to me because I think a lot of people are confused why they may be going to meetings for quite some time and the promises have not come into their life. Well, if you'll read along, I'm going to change a couple of the words, or add to it, really. And let's see if you've ever heard it or read it this way before. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, of course, we're talking about amends here, so we're going to say, if we are painstaking about amends, we will be amazed before we are halfway through with our amends. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness as a result of making our amends. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace as a result of making our amends. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others as a result of making our amends. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear as a result of making our amends, because I will see that I'm able to help some people in the strangest ways I never thought possible when I'm actually making the amend. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away as a result of making our amends, because what I start to realize is these people that I hated, that I wanted nothing to do with, were actually not bad people. I just owed them money or something. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and an economic insecurity will leave us, because I will have cleaned up all the scrapes that I had with people, and I will have paid back the money through amends, so therefore I'm no longer afraid of those things. I will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle me, and I will suddenly realize that God is doing for me what I could not do for myself as a result of making amends, because there were people that should have hurt me when I approached them in my mind for making amends, and yet I left there with a handshake. Strangest thing. Are these extravagant promises? No, they're not. They're being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly, depending on how quickly or slowly I make my amends. They will always materialize if I make my amends. Different. I can't just show up at meetings and have the ninth step promises actually happen. I have to do something. Strange. Action. So we're going to get into some more action in steps 10 and 11. This thought, the thought of amends, brings us to step 10, which suggests that we continue to take personal inventory and we set right any new mistakes as we go along. We vigorously commence this way of living as we made our amends. Ask your counselor, if you go to one, how many sessions do I need to go to until I can enter the world of the Spirit? You might get some new meds prescribed to you. What do you mean by enter the world of the Spirit? You know, like spiritual stuff. Okay. Might get a straitjacket or something like that put on your
team. How many meetings do I have to go to?
Yeah, exactly. How many meetings do you have to go to until you enter the world of the Spirit? Good question, Bill. I don't know. I've seen people that have done 90 and 90 and they have not entered the world of the Spirit. Our next function is to grow in understanding of effectiveness. With what? With everything. So the 10th step is what I do from the moment I leave my house until the moment I come back to my house that evening. That's the 10th step. The 10th step in the 12 and 12 gets confusing because it talks about three different types of inventories and talks about that. But the evening review portion is actually part of the 11th step that Tarek will go through and show you that. So step 10 is the walking around step. This is my interaction with others. Okay? Like Tarek talked about. Step one is
self-examination.
Step two, turn to God.
Turn to God and two.
Turn to others.
Turn to others.
Three.
And three.
Yeah. So 10 is self-examination.
So we repeat the pattern.
Mm-hmm.
So now we're back in self-examination with step 10. Okay. So this is how I interact with other people. Okay. Now, I recommend people right out of the gate start practicing steps 10 and 11 conceptually, but I think that the real practice of step 10 and 11 really doesn't happen until after you get through the first 9 steps because you don't even understand what you're looking for. Okay? But the essentially you can start to understand this. So this is not an overnight matter. It should continue for our lifetime. Now, I break down the 10th step, this part of it, into 5 different instructions. Okay? Continue to watch. There's my first instruction. What am I watching for? Selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. How do I know what those even look like? Well, if I've done an inventory in step 4, read it to somebody in 5, gone through 6 and 7, 8 and 9, I now know I've got this interaction with life that I get to experience, and I have things to watch for. And I can tell you that when I'm in conversations with people and I see one of those less desirable character traits kind of bubbling up, I say to myself, ooh, there he is again. I actually say that in my head. I'm watching my thoughts. I'm watching what's happening. I'm watching my interactions with other people. Okay? Because it doesn't say if these crop up, it says when these crop up, the selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear, because it's going to happen. Okay? I ask God to remove them at once. Right? Ask. There's the second instruction. Now, this is phenomenally fast. You want to see God work quickly? We were living in an apartment as our house was getting finished, and the kids and my wife and everybody pissed me off really, really bad, and I was leaving to go to the store, and I got to this intersection, and I was playing with this resentment and all this crap that I was mad about, and I said, hey God, will you please remove this resentment from me by the time I get through this intersection? Right? Unreasonable prayer, right? Well, so I go through the intersection, kind of winding down this road. There's a white fence. There's a pond over there. And I'm kind of, and I'm like, wait, where was the resentment? Where did the resentment go? Like, literally, it was gone. So I like to mess with God sometimes and kind of punish myself. So I tried to fire the resentment off again in my head. It wasn't there. This prayer, when you get to the 10th step, asking God to remove it, can happen that fast. Now, sometimes, it's happened multiple times, I go to ask God to remove that prayer or through the prayer, and I'm too wound up, too wrapped around the axle. Luckily, we have another instruction which is called discuss. We discuss them with someone immediately. So what happens with me is I've got this kind of order of people that I call. Usually Tarek's first. I'll call Tarek and say, I called him one time and he was on a date with his daughter, which usually he wouldn't answer the phone, but intuitively he must have known I needed help. So he answers the phone. He's like, "Hey, what's up? I'm on a date with Callie," and I was like, "I need help." He's like, "Okay, what you got?" So I realize that it's very important that I explain to him quickly what's going on so that I'm not ruining his night. So in about five sentences, I tell him the background, and he asked me one question. He just says, "Have you and Carrie ever discussed what to do in this situation?" "No." "Thanks." That was it. So I discussed it with someone. We talked a little bit more about it later because the next instruction here is to make. We make amends quickly if we've harmed anyone. So I think you combine these two together. So when we talked about it later the next day, we were talking through the whole situation to find out if I actually had created a harm to her to see if I actually needed to make an amend. Luckily, all the craziness that was going on in my head was not shared with her. And aside from just sending her some negative energy impulses, she didn't know I was this banged up about it. But then I went home that next evening, sat down, had a conversation about her with protocol. And the strangest thing happened. She goes, "Oh my gosh, you must think I'm absolutely crazy that I was doing what I was doing." She's like, "I'm so sorry." And it's like, wow, look at that. I go to her in a level head, nice, reasonable, and we get a resolution that I'm actually pleased with. Weird, huh? Then we resolutely turn. There's the fifth instruction for me. Our thoughts to someone we can help, love and tolerance of others is our code. Okay, so, and then we get these really kick-ass 10th step promises that you cannot get through any other thing than getting to the 10th step. And they say, "And we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol, cocaine, methamphetamines, her, him, the boss. For by this time, sanity will have returned. We will seldom be interested in liquor or drugs. If tempted, we recoil from them as from a hot flame. We react sanely and normally, and we will find that this has happened automatically. We will see that our new attitude towards drugs and alcohol has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That is the miracle of it. We are not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we've been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected." How many sessions are you going to have to go to with your counselor to be safe and protected? I can tell you the answer to the number of meetings that you have to go to get safe and protected, I don't think has been discovered, because one time Tarek was my discussion leader and he talked about the 10th step. And he had several people come up to him afterwards to explain to him why the position of neutrality is not possible. Tarek's response was, "Explain to me what step you're on and how you're working the steps." They were one of those people that made themselves available for sponsorship. Okay. "We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed." Magic does not exist for us. We are neither cocky, nor are we afraid. That is our experience. That is how we react so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. Notice that there's a disclaimer there. I don't react this way if I am not in fit spiritual condition. If I'm not willing to do the other steps, I probably will not reach a position of neutrality. That's why these promises, they're very conditional, right? So it would be easy to let up on our spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels, okay? Our laurels are the past accomplishments, right? The person that wants to tell you how much sobriety that they have, but you watch them and they're crazy as hell, They're resting on their laurels. Okay? We are headed for trouble if we do, for alcohol and drugs are a subtle foe. We are not cured of our alcoholism and drug addiction. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. Every day is a day we must carry the vision of God's will into all our activities. Okay? So, my spiritual fitness is daily. I stay sober the rest of my life. My spiritual fitness is a daily job. I have to practice it every day. Prayer, meditation, evening review, tenth stepping with friends. These are things that are necessary for me to maintain my spiritual condition. So, in that last sentence, it talks about vision, right? Vision, to me, ties into the 11th step just as much as it does in the 10th step. But, like, if I don't have a vision for how I want to interact with people, if I don't have a vision for how I want to go about my day, if I don't have a vision of what a sober person looks like, how am I going to know if I've made it? If I want to go to Seattle, I'm not in Seattle, am I? I have to create a plan and work the plan, and then I end up in Seattle. As part of my post-fifth step exercise with guys, I have them generally all write a vision of how they want to be in recovery, an ideal, how they want to be in relationships, how they want to be at work. If they're a father, then I want them to write out their vision of how they want to be a father. Because if we don't ever identify how we want to do and be in these relationships, what are we aiming for? Are we just hoping that we're going to be a good father, a good worker, have good sobriety? How can I best serve thee? Thy will be done, not mine. These are thoughts which must go with us constantly. We can exercise our willpower along this line all we wish is the proper use of the will. I had this conversation last night with a person. The third step, we turn our will and our life over to the care of God. And the tenth step, we get to exercise our willpower now. The difference, and if you haven't been through the process, you cannot understand the difference. The difference is that between 3 and 10, I've done steps 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. So, I'm given access back to a source, power, that I get to interact and co-create my life with. I get to bring these things into my life with the help of the power. It's not my doing. It's in alignment with the power. So, if the universe, God, whatever it is, knows that I'm not going to have malicious intent towards other people, I can work with that power. Back before I got sober, I would have prayed that all sorts of people would die. And if I had the kind of power I have now, that would be misuse, right? But when I align my will with God, with love, in service of others, I gain more access to power. Because I'm not going to go around causing all sorts of harm like I used to. Okay? There's the big difference between what happens in 3 and where we're at in 10. Okay? So, much has already been said about receiving strength, inspiration, and direction from God, who has all knowledge and power. If we've carefully followed all the steps prior to this step, we have begun to sense the flow of God's Spirit into us. To some extent, we have become God conscious. Not just faith, not just belief, but a connection with. A conscious communication. My intuitive thoughts are in alignment with. We have begun to develop this vital sixth sense. I think there's more than six, by the way, guys. But we must go further, and it means more action. We've got five senses in the material world. I think that there's other stuff in the spiritual world that we gain access to. The problem is our concrete reality that we live in seems so tangible to us because it comes at us at the place where we receive the other senses that we think this is all that exists. The tenth step is the access to the intuitive life that you cultivate through the 11th step. Now, there's a way to receive a tenth step call, too, that I think is just as important as your actual tenth step. I started sharing this with people years ago when I had a sponsee call me because one of the guys that he was 10-stepping with got pissed off at him because he agreed with him. And the guy said, "You're not supposed to agree with me. You're supposed to challenge me." And he called me and he's like, "What the hell? Why is he mad at me that I agreed with him?" Like, because you could be killing him. See, when a guy calls me on a 10-step call, I need to be able to help him see how his troubles are of his own making. Help turn him back to him so that he can see that he created the situation that he's in. And if I'm sitting there agreeing with you, you're right, she is a bitch. How's he ever going to see what he's done in the situation to create it?
Energy for the
point. Yeah.
So one of the things that we do at our program is we require our guys to develop an accountability network. So they can begin to seek guidance. And they always they come back sometimes and there's no one on the board, like their accountability box is empty, but then they want to rattle off that they're accountable to a bunch of guys in the program and with them. And then I try to explain to them, do you understand in some situations that's like the blind leading the blind? It's important to have people in your network that got clean and sober around the same time as you, so you guys can grow through the experience together, right? But here's the deal. Chances are someone you get clean and sober with and move through this process with, when you're not in a place like the Bridges where you're in a process that requires an accountability. When you get out in the real world, it's not like that. Okay, it's not like that out in the real world. So it's something that has to be cultivated. And there's a rebuilding process. I don't care what program you're in. This is the problem we have in this industry is people are in these programs and they become dependent on the program and the fellowship they have within the program. That's not the real world. Most of you guys are going to go back somewhere else. There's a whole rebuilding process that has to happen. And that's where a lot of individuals, not just here at the Bridges, a lot of programs, this is where it fails. The actions are not taken to cultivate that relationship. It stays the blind leading the blind. The important thing is we're all going to hit those life situations that are very difficult to address. What happens is Brandon and I, we go to people that we have a good idea they've had the experience. Or if I haven't had the experience, I'm going to find him someone that has, that's been around longer. I'm not going to try to talk to somebody about a specific situation that I have no experience with. I've been around too long. I know too many people. I can find him someone that's walked through that experience clean and sober. But you're not going to find that when you're only looking with people that you got clean and sober with. Every once in a while, you may find it. So it's a magical combination of road dogs, as my sponsor calls them. You got to have your road dogs, but then you got to have your teachers and your guides. You got to have both. I get it, but you want to have some fun and you want to be able to talk to your boys, but your boys are going to co-sign your bullshit sometimes, okay? And that's what we don't want, and that's what he's talking about. So every time a sponsee calls Brandon or I, we're trying to steer them back to your troubles of your own making. I want to say I can never... But I have to say, there have been a couple of situations where it was really hard to not side with the guy I was on the phone with. But that's for another conversation. Yeah. I always have to take, if he's calling me about his girlfriend, I'm always going to take the girlfriend's side in some way. If it's about the wife, I'm always going to take the wife's side in some point. I need to do that. I got to drift him back to, you created the situation. Sorry.
Can't tell you how many times where I've called Tarek about a sticky situation. He goes, oh, yeah, you're in a tough one. But then we kind of work our way through it and try to understand it. Question?
Yeah, this might be a dumb question. Would you say that the 11th step nightly review and the 10th step are pretty well intertwined? Like as far as making the checklist, I know the 10th step includes like further action as far as making amends where harm done and talking to somebody about it. But isn't that kind of like kind of done like at the same time? I guess?
It's kind of like a sandwich, is the way I look at it. You do the 11th step in the morning, your prayer and meditation, your plans for the day, which Tarek will cover all that. You go out of the house, you interact with life in the 10th step. Intuition is playing a part in it. Okay, there's some language in the 11th step that talks about intuition that you experience when bothered, you pause when agitated, ask for right thought, right action. Okay, that's in the 11th step, but it's referring to the 10th step. But then you return home in the evening and there's more to that. And Tarek will go in, there's a lot of detail that Tarek will go into around that. I think that some of your questions will be answered when he goes into what he does. If not, get with us afterwards and we'll make sure we're clear. So when I'm receiving a call, usually the first indication that you're wrong, if you're calling me, is I start laughing. You're wrapped around the axle about something, and I give the little chuckle that you've heard plenty this weekend. That usually is a pretty good indicator to you that you're wrong, okay? And it's funny to me that you can't see it, okay? So what I'm listening for is I'm listening for some background. I'm going to ask some questions. The main thing I'm listening for is, did you actually harm the other person? Did you create a harm in this situation? And I'm listening for certain language, and I'll ask questions like, did you actually say that to her? Okay, good. Don't do that. Don't do that. Don't say that. But then we kind of work our way through. And again, the thing that I'm trying to do is change the focus back to you. I had a guy call me one time, and his wife had expressed to him that she did not like him with long hair. And at the time, I had some luscious locks going on myself. And so it was like, I had to chuckle a little bit. And I'm like, I think the statement was, a grown man shouldn't have long hair. Was that what it was? And I was a grown man with long hair. And I had to sit there for a second and go, okay, wait. Because he presented his case, and I said, you don't need me to agree with you, do you? And he said, well, that's why I'm calling you. And so I had to kind of do a little mini meditation that lasted maybe 10 seconds, and I was like, okay. So when you met her, did you have long hair?
I remember that.
And he said, no. And I said, so you grew your hair out after you met her and after you've been together for a number of years? He's like, yes. It's like, okay. I was like, so let's say that, I mean, she's a pretty fit, you know, good-looking woman. Let's say that after you get into the relationship with her, she gains 150 pounds. Is that a significant change for you? Well, yeah. Would you feel like the deal has changed if that happened? Yes, I would feel that the deal has changed. Okay. Would you maybe say something that you thought that she may have been better looking back then? He's like, well, I wouldn't say that, but yeah, it would be reasonably understood. Okay. And by this point in time, usually the people I'm talking to understand the thing that I'm trying to get them to realize is that you've changed something that you've changed the terms of the deal, right? And so the perspective will shift. The troubles could be seen as that person, just no different than when I called Tarek and he said, have you guys ever discussed what you do in this situation? I mean, instantly, I just realized, no, we haven't, and I need to discuss it. Change like that. There have only been a handful of times where I've been that wrapped around something where I needed to be redirected, and it was usually with less than 5 minutes I got redirected by Tara. When a guy continues to cycle again and again and again, he's telling the same story, and it's just like, dude, I don't have time for this shit. I'll sit there and I'll in my head I'll just take him through a little piece of inventory. Okay, so you're pissed off at him. Why? Okay, who are you in the situation? How's your self-esteem affected? Pride. We go through the whole thing. By the time we get to column four, the person's done with it. So there's different techniques that I use when a person calls me on a 10th step to get them to realize their position is flawed. Okay? That's how you receive a 10th step call. My job is not to agree with you and say, yes, you're right. That's not my job.
All right. That was a very adequate presentation of the 10th step, in my opinion. Now, my late grand sponsor used to say that the first 9 steps are the launching pad into the world of the Spirit. And the world of the Spirit lies in steps 10 and 11, and they have their own language. And the language is the 10th and 11th step. It's the language of the heart. The 10th step to me is about staying awake, and it's about intent and intuition. Bill Wilson, in the 12 and 12, confused all of us because he wrote it about, he talks about a spot check inventory, and he talks about an assets versus liabilities inventory, and he talks about an inventory at the end of the day. The way I look at the 10th step, it's an inventory of myself as I walk through the day. Now, the evening review, what I do at the end of the day, that's just the bottom half of the sentence, in my opinion, that requires reflection and self-examination. So we took our daughter to the Buddhist monastery to learn how to meditate. And she was taking these meditation classes, and she comes home with this exercise she has to do. And it's a series of questions she has to ask herself at the end of the day. And they looked very similar to the questions we asked ourselves on page 87, believe it or not. Or 86, I'm sorry. When we retire at night, when we constructively review our day, were we resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? Do we owe an apology? Have we kept something to ourselves which should be discussed with another person, which happens to be, I think, the most important question out of all of them? Were we kind and loving toward all? What could we have done better? Were we thinking of ourselves most of the time, which is always yes? And were we thinking of what we could do for others, of what we could pack into the stream of life? And she had a lot of questions that reminded me of those. So I saw how that exercise was different than what the monks were teaching us about staying awake and present during the course of the day. And what I think the 10th step was about is staying awake. Watch, ask, turn, practice a code of love and tolerance, cease fighting, position of neutrality, vision work, intuition. That's in the moment. That's in the moment stuff. So I make a distinction between what I do in the evening review at night, and I wrote evening review for years. I've probably got 3 or 4 spiral notebooks, pages front and back written, where I used to write this stuff. I even had a partner. We used to share it with each other at night. Now, I don't write evening review anymore, but I wrote it for years. I have personal experience with it. Now when I do this, I just look at this paragraph and I reflect. I go back through my day. I sort of try to recreate everyone I had an interaction with and who did I talk to today. And then I ask myself these questions. And that's the end of the day. Brandon described the middle of the day. Then they talk about on awakening. So for years, I used to read 86 through 88. Then I met a guy named Scott who sponsored me for 8 years. And he taught me to do 84 to 88. And he taught me how to turn it into a conversation with God. Instead of just reading the pages every day, that becomes a little boring after a while. And so what I would do for years, I did this probably for the better part of 5 years. God, thank you for bringing me into the world of the Spirit this morning. My function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. Please help me with this. I know this is not an overnight matter. It's going to continue for my lifetime. Please help me today. Watch for selfishness, dishonesty, and resentment and fear. When these crop up, God, make me aware to turn to you to ask you for help. Make me aware to discuss them with someone immediately when I need to, and make amends quickly when I've harmed someone. Help me turn my thoughts to someone I can help. Help me practice. So I started talking to God as I was going through these pages. And that was very effective for a while. But remember the morality that I told you, I suggested that the only morality is if it's working for you, keep doing it. If it's not working for you, try something else. Well, I got to a point where this stuff wasn't working for me anymore. I wanted more. And thank God for the men in my life, because they stressed a very important sentence on page 87. At the bottom of 87, it says, "Be quick to see where religious people are right and make use of what they offer." I mean, guys, if I brought you to my home and showed you the books that I'm working with and the library that I have, and I'm not telling you this to brag. I'm telling you this because it excites me. Spirituality is an ancient thing. And then when I made the comment earlier this weekend that the 12 steps are spiritual kindergarten, they are. But they're still the vehicle and the modality by which I was delivered to the spiritual realm. And that hopefully, I hope to God they will always hold a very special place in my heart. But there are several things that I do outside of the 12 steps that are more important for my spirituality than the 12 steps are, but they will never replace the 12 steps. I do it along with the steps, never instead of. So let's go back to page 86. On awakening, let us think about the 24 hours ahead. We consider our plans for the day. Did they just say the same thing in two sentences? 24 hours ahead in our plans for the day. I wonder why they worded it like that. One of my teachers, this man, his name is Joe Hawk, he greatly influenced the way I look at things. And he said in one of his workshops that perhaps the 24 hours ahead is my beingness for the day, like the states of being that I want to embody. I want to be confident today. I want to be trusting today. I want to be open today. I want to be vulnerable today. I want to be giving today. Those are all states of being. Then it says, consider our plans for the day, and that's doing. So he said the 24 hours was being, and when you consider your plans for the day, those are actually the tasks you have to do. Made a lot of sense to me, so just wanted to share that with you. And then it says, before we would begin, we ask God to direct our thinking, especially divorcing. So, you know, I would go through and have that conversational dialogue with God. But in my opinion, the hardest spiritual practice that you can find in this big book is at the bottom of page 87. As I go through the day, I pause. I believe the pause has to do with conscious breathing. When agitated or doubtful, and ask for the right thought or action. Most of the spiritual work I do today is based on conscious breathing, which is around the pause. I'm a guy who believes through acknowledging my breath, I have acknowledged God. It's pretty simple for me. So I try to come to my breath and imagine there is no God but God. I become aware of the presence when I say that, and I move through my day, and I try to do that as often as possible. That's my goal. So, there's a world, an endless realm of material out there about prayer and meditation, folks. And this is the fun part of the program. As Mark used to say, all of the juice in our program lies in the 10th and 11th step. Well, I know that the 12th step has some electricity, no doubt about it. But there's just something meaty and juicy and exciting about the 10th and 11th step for me. There truly is. But I think we do it a disservice. I am tired of hearing people say, stay in 10, 11, and 12. Especially for people that are early recovery. Stay in 10, 11, and 12. They should be saying, stay in 9, 10, 11, and 12. At my program on the board, when guys get up into 10, 11, and 12, it doesn't say 10 through 12. It says 9 through 12. Have you ever noticed how the focus is always on 10, 11, 12? Ninth step, long period of reconstruction lies ahead. I think there needs to be some emphasis on 9, 10, 11, and 12. That was a side note. So, back to this beautiful concept of prayer. Now, guys, I'm going to tell you, until I lost my father in my marriage in the same month, I don't know if I ever had a... up to that point, I don't know if I could label my prayer life as heartfelt and sincere. It was something I found vital. It was something that I practiced. But the sincerity and the connection to my heart did not show up until last year, about 15 months ago. I think there's an awakened presence that resides at the heart of life. And we can access it through the 10th and 11th step. Now, I also believe that prayer without the presence of the heart is invalid. One of the most interesting phrases I've heard in my time on this path. And so what's changed about my prayer life, ever since I heard this man give this talk on this, when I sit down to pray, I am silent, but it's not meditation. I am silent and I'm envisioning bringing my heart into the prayer. I'm asking myself in that quiet, why am I praying? Do I have knowledge of why I pray? Or is it just something I'm doing because they tell me to do it? So what I came to after doing that reflection was, I've been around for almost 11 years. I've watched a lot of people come and go. And I'm going to tell you that I don't know one person. Like my friends Carl and Lindsay, they got sober a year and a half before me. So I can't count them in this. But I don't know one person that got sober and clean around the same time I did that's still around. I can't think of anybody. There's several that were there, they left, they came back, left, came back, and now they might be here right now. I'm the only one that I know of that has stayed continuously sober that I can bring into my consciousness in this moment. And I've watched, we've all watched so many people die over these last 2 years. And I've sponsored a ton of guys down at the Salvation Army who had a first step that made my first step look like a walk in the park. Like me, my losing my home, the bankruptcy, being incarcerated, all that stuff that happened to me was nothing compared to what these men had been through at the Sally. But for whatever reason, I wake up every morning for almost 11 years, and I would say almost every morning, with the same degree of willingness I had yesterday. And I'm not the source of that willingness, and I'm not the source of my surrender, so that leaves me in a state of reverence. And the word reverence means respect. I respect this power. Because I could be driving home tomorrow with Brandon and both of our tickets get punched. That's how quickly things can change. And that hasn't been my path, and I'm very, very grateful and I'm very reverent towards this power for providing that for me. That's why I'm praying. That's knowledge of why I pray. Am I present to my praying? Am I making myself available to the presence of God? So part of my prayer life today and meditation is cultivating the expectancy of God. Cultivating the expectancy of God. He is there. She is there. It is there. No words. All words are limited. You cannot use words to describe what we're talking about. But we're going to do the best we can with the words available to us. So my goal and what I do with my spirituality is I want to see the unity that pervades all of existence. To me, a word that is not synonymous with God is life. Life is this ever unfolding entity within itself. And this is what I've come to believe around my conception of God, and it makes it really simple. You know, for me, there is no separate entity that's making decisions or deciding to answer my prayer right now. That's just not what I believe. Whatever you believe is absolutely fine. I'm just going to share a little bit about what I believe because it has to do with my prayer and meditation life. Where have I accessed all this? Through prayer and meditation and reading through all these traditions and asking people and getting people to help teach me things that they've gone through that I have found effective. When it was time to learn meditation, Scott said, "Why don't you go to a Buddhist monastery?" Right, so I'm walking my dog. I just moved back into my parents' house. I had a year and like 2 months, 3 months. This is like the spring of 2009. And I'm walking down, and there's a Buddhist monastery, and it's got a big banner. That said, and I didn't know it was a Buddhist monastery this time. I just saw the banner that said free meditation classes. Literally in the same week I've had this conversation with Scott. And so I show up at this building to see what the meditation classes were about. So this whole time, I grew up less than a half a mile from a Buddhist monastery. Never knew it because it sits off the road. And so I went, walked in there, free meditation classes. So for two years in the spring and the fall, I would take the classes. And they taught me about the history of Buddhism, what it means to be a Buddhist, and they taught me different meditation techniques. And because I wanted to learn. I had that desire. Now, since then, I've learned a lot of other techniques that have to do with meditation and certain types of prayer and prayer beads and what you use those for. But this is all based around this idea for me that spirituality is not other world. All of these things that I practice are in an attempt to become a complete human at one point in the future, because it's not happening now. I still have too many things that are driving me that are, I would say, based in my lower nature, my desires. I get driven, and I don't always see the spirit, that entity that's peering out from behind your eyes looking at me right now. It's the same thing that's peering out from behind my eyes. You want to ground yourself and become present in a conversation with someone? Peer into their eyes and ask yourself if whatever's peering out from behind their eyes is the same thing that's peering out from behind your eyes. It will ground you in the conversation immediately. So a lot of what I do is based on operating with the what I call an etiquette. I do my best. I fall short. But I think the spiritual life has an etiquette to it. And I attempt to live by it, and I attempt to resist. But when things fall apart for me, there's very little judgment these days. And it's through a lot of prayer and meditation that I've developed all these insights. Prayer and meditation, reading books, contemplation, self-examination, bonding with my fellow travelers, seeking guidance, protecting my spirituality. Nothing becomes in between me and the practices that I have to have in my life to be in a relationship with a power greater than myself. And I'm eager to learn from others. I grew up in a set tradition. They were not orthodox. They didn't try to cram it down my throat, but they had their own way of doing things. And I have discovered all kinds of things that I have believed to be true at one point or another. And then about 5 years ago, I just settled on this one thing, and I've continued to incorporate my prayer and meditation life into that. Ultimately, talking about what Brandon had mentioned, cultivating intuition cannot be... My goal is to be conscious of the presence of God as often as possible. One of the best lines in our big book is in the back of the book. It's in the Spiritual Experience Appendix. It says, most of us believe that the essence of the spiritual experience is simply the awareness of a power greater than ourselves. That's it. That means I think and remember God as often as possible. I have found that's possible through conscious breathing. If, you know, the Bible says God blew his breath into us. He said, be and we became. That's all I need to know to connect my breath to God. So when I connect with my breath, I immediately acknowledge the presence of God. This I've learned through prayer and meditation. This line in our book, be quick to see where religious people are right, make use of what they offer, is part of our 11th step. So I would encourage you to incorporate some outside books. There are so many cool books out there to read. And not just reading the books. Like for what I do is I have 4 books and I read 2 pages out of each book in the morning. I do my prayers. I sometimes use my prayer beads, and then I have my meditation. I burn some sage. I've got a little altar. I've got all these crystals, and I've got all the different religions represented on my altar, because that's the kind of open mind that I've been blessed with for whatever reason. and it's just, it's exciting. I have some fun with it. It doesn't get mechanical for me. Now, there are some days when I wake up in a state of hassle, or why do I have to do this, or what's the reason that I do it? If God is everything, what's the point anyway? I have those struggles and those days where I just seem to wake up in a cloud of depression. They come and go. That's fine. It's part of human existence. But I don't know how we found ourselves in this culture that wants to make you comfortable all the damn time. Now, this is... Okay. This is my gripe with detox. Okay? Like, I wake up in these states of depression, and there's not a month goes by that I don't experience 2 to 4 days of depression and I don't sleep. And it's okay. It's just part of it. It's like changing me on some level. It causes me to reflect on something. And I'm okay with it. What happens to us is we shoot dope for like 6 weeks straight, right? We smoke crack. We go on a real bad crack run. Alcohol spree from hell. We drink ourselves into kidney failure. Show up in detox. And we are twisted, right? They could diagnose us as schizophrenic, bipolar, depressed, anxiety, all of it. And what do they immediately want to do? They want to put you on meds to make you comfortable. I wonder what our success rates would be if we let the addicts just sit in that shit. I wonder if it would become unacceptable to you to go through that shit if you just got to sit in it for once and not get so comfortable. Now, I get there's a whole part of it that, you know, you don't want to be inhumane to these individuals with some of the withdrawal symptoms. I mean, I've watched guys withdraw before. I know it can be pretty bad, but, I mean, only benzos and alcohol, to my knowledge, can kill you. Those have to be medically supervised. The rest of that stuff is just what we go through. The shits and the... I love when they come to me with the restless leg and I need some medication for that shit. I just don't get it, why we live in that culture that doesn't want to explore a spiritual solution. They want a man-made solution of medication. All right. Then I get the argument back, well, if God is everything, God gave us the meds. Okay, I can go with that argument. But needless to say, it still doesn't address the situation of comfort. I mean, ask yourself, really take a hard look at that. I wonder if the surrender would happen more often if you were forced to sit through that. I don't know.
So the guys that were working out in the gym earlier, who were throwing up that weight, when you were actually in the process of lifting the weight, was it really, really comfortable? Or was it kind of painful in that moment when you're throwing the weight up? So when we work out, we're actually reaching a state of uncomfortability. We tear the muscles that we're working out with. They heal and swell and gain strength. Right? That's physiologically what happens when we work out. We tear the muscle. It swells, repairs, gains strength. Repeat, 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 repeat. What good is it going to do to go to the gym if when you go to lift that first weight and you feel a little bit of pain? Here, let me help you with that. What's the fucking point of working out? What Tarek's talking about is this spiritual workout that you need to do that might actually motivate you and propel you through the rest of the steps. But if you're going to get comfortable... Just go back.
I don't know. Maybe, perhaps it doesn't make a difference. Well, we hope that we excited you about these two steps, because if you do practice them, I'm going to share with you two experiences that might become available to you. In 2015, I had this idea to start a program, a 12-step immersion program. And I decided to go into business with a gentleman, and this was around May or June, and we signed a letter of intent. And I still had another job, and at this other job, we would have these quarterly meetings where they would start to share 5-year plans, and it always had me being promoted. So I began to feel like I was living a double life. I was leaving at the end of the year, and nobody knew. By August, it just become apparent, I guess, to my VP that something was off with me. And sometime after that, he called me into his office one day and he asked me what was going on. And prior to that, I'd gone to one of my teachers and told him that I was living this double life. And he told me, he said, you know, living the way you live and these spiritual practices that you have, it'll become unacceptable and you'll be compelled to be honest whether you want to or not. And I was real fearful because what if I got honest with them, told them I was resigning at the end of the year, we just bought this big house, huge mortgage payment. If I lose my job, I've got a wife and a daughter to support. What the hell am I going to do? And that's what was the fear that was driving me not to be transparent about my decision. So he calls me into his office in September and he says to me, what's going on? And I saw the dialogue in my head. It's like, are you really about to do this? No, you're not. Yes, you are. No, you're not. And I did it. And he was really understanding. And we had a really good talk. And then I was walking out of his office and he said, you know, before you start this new business, you should tell me what number it's going to take to keep you here. And I forgot to tell you all a very important thing. The incident that catapulted me into even thinking about starting the recovery program was I'd gone to them and asked for a raise at the beginning of the year and they turned me down. And I was resentful. And so I said, okay, I'm going to go start my own business. And so that happened at the beginning of the year. So when he comes to me and says, what number is it going to take to keep you here? I was not happy about that. I was like, none of this uncertainty would have happened if you'd just given me the raise at the beginning of the year when I asked for it. So I ignored him. I didn't tell him. A few weeks later, it's the last week in September, he's about to go to Missouri for the fourth quarter meetings. He comes to my office on a Friday. And he says, I want you to take this weekend to create your dream job with this company and how much you want to make. And I leave next Tuesday, so get it done by Monday. And I did it over the weekend. And he went up to the quarterly meetings and he came back and they gave me what I asked for. More money than I've ever made and a promotion. And then the struggle really began because now I've got this letter of intent with this investment to start this recovery program, but I've got more money than I've ever made and a mortgage and a wife and a daughter. And I started praying about it. And I was sitting morning prayer and meditation, and the prayer was, God, please guide me and direct me, provide me with some clarity of what I need to do. And nothing would come. I'm sure I had talks with Brandon. I had talks with multiple people. I had no clarity. All I had was uncertainty. But one thing Scott taught me that I'll never forget was, like, when you're uncertain, don't do anything. And so I didn't do anything. Then one morning, I said the prayer. I said, God, please make it obvious to me what I'm supposed to do.
Scary prayer.
Scary prayer. So I go downstairs. The morning I said the prayer, I go downstairs and Callie was 8 years old at this point, and she was drawing a lot, and she would leave her drawings all over the house. And her and Marcy were gone for the day, but on the coffee table was one of her drawings. And I have this framed on my desk in my office. It was this little red square with like three stars around it, and it says, follow your dream. And I made my decision based on that because I asked. And immediately after, that's what my dream has been to have my own recovery program. So when she gets home from school, I said, Callie, why did you draw this? She goes, I don't know. I was supposed to draw that today.
All right. When you get on the spiritual path and you start following intuition, a lot of it looks crazy to people around you. I had an experience. We purchased this property. Borrowed half the money to purchase the property that we live on from my parents. The other half, we owed them we gave them that money in April. The other half of the money I owed them, I owed the person we were buying it from by the end of the year. So from April all the way through December, my parents, my wife, everybody kept asking me, where's the money going to come from to pay for the property? My response was, it'll be there. Yeah, but really, where's the money going to come from? It'll show up. Are we going to earn it? We're going to save it? We're going to borrow it? What are we going to do? It'll show up. Okay, Brandon's really lost it now. Brandon's going a little bit kooky. He's just believing that this money's going to show up. I can't tell you how many times they asked me. Probably 20, 30 times. The answer was always, it'll show up. So it's kind of, when you start paying attention to the universe, you can see things working that you don't really know exactly what's going on, but you can see the forces moving out there in the universe, and you're like, wow. It kind of feels like that's where it's coming from. So through the way that we were having to buy our house, we actually had to sell our house first, move into an apartment so that they could finish building our house so that we could move out to the property. So we put our house on the market, and it sold like within like 5 days. But they didn't want to close until January 15th, and I owed this money by the end of the year, so I called the attorney and said, hey, can we get an extension of like 30 days? And the attorney's like, well, you know, what's that worth to you? And I'm like, well, it's worth something. I don't know what a reasonable amount of money to give somebody for an extra month of them holding the financing on the property is, because it was a no-interest loan. And she's like, how about $350? I'm like, sounds great. I'll bring you the check later on today. So we end up closing on the 15th. And then we reclose on the property, or we give the payment on the property on the 31st. And if you look at the money in escrow plus the $350 that we paid plus all the forces that moved around, the money that the proceeds from the house were within like it was less than $200 of the exact amount of what we owed. The money just showed up. Everybody thought I was crazy and then would ask me, how did you know? And my response was the same. I just knew it would show up. You look a little kooky to the outside world when you start following the spiritual path. I'm okay with that.
That's it. Alright, I think that wraps us for steps 10 and 11. We're going to take a break. Let's come back at 9 o'clock and we'll have our speaker meeting. Yeah.